The FCC is moving forward with plans to reinstate a set of regulations called net neutrality. The rules aim to prevent internet service providers from slowing or blocking some online services while prioritizing others. Their latest proposal would bring back many of the same net neutrality rules that were adopted back in 2015 under the Obama administration, but then repealed by the FCC under former President Trump. Current FCC Chair Jessica Rosenworcel announced the plan last month. The first draft of the proposal was approved by the FCC board earlier this month in a 3-2 party line vote.
So if your broadband provider mucks up your traffic, messes around with your ability to go where you want and do what you want online, you can't just pick up and take your business to another provider. That provider may be the only game in town. You need a referee on the field looking out for the public interest and ensuring that access is fast, open, and fair.
Republicans and telecoms groups have criticized net neutrality as regulatory overreach that they say is unnecessary. It's the latest in an ongoing debate over broadband oversight, and it raises questions about how the internet has operated with and without net neutrality. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want these net neutrality rules for internet providers back in place? Why or why not? Do you think the internet should be treated like a utility, or should it be left to an open market? What questions do you have about this long-running debate? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Christopher Terry is an associate professor of media ethics and law at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. He's a Wisconsin native who's a graduate of UW-Oshkosh, UW-Milwaukee, and UW-Madison. Christopher, welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thanks for having me.
In basic terms, what is net neutrality?
Net neutrality is a term that was coined by Columbia professor Tim Wu to describe the regulation of network management practices. More simply, it covers three basic provisions. It prevents your internet service provider from blocking content it doesn't want you to have, reducing speed or access to content it might not want you to have a lot, or prioritizing its own content. So lots of cable companies that provide internet service also own media companies, and directing you to their content at a higher speed, which is called paid prioritization.
Since net neutrality was overturned under the Trump administration, do we know, have internet service providers been doing that stuff, slowing down or green lighting different online things, different websites, services?
Well, there's two things. Number one, net neutrality did not go away with the Trump administration under Ajit Pai at the FCC moving regulation back to Title I. What happened was is that you took away the federal regulation of that. And in the absence of that, many states, including most notably California, implemented their own net neutrality rules when the FCC stepped out of the way. So it's not correct. And there's a lot of discussion of this, that net neutrality wasn't necessary because it hasn't, nothing bad happened in the intervening years. But it's not true that net neutrality wasn't in place. It just wasn't in place at the federal level.
Is it possible for internet service providers not in one of those states to do these things, to slow down or speed up internet? Or is it such a, you know, global market that if they can't do it in California, they don't do it anywhere?
Well, there are 14, sometimes counted as 18 states that have a similar provision to California's. California's is the only one that was tested in court. That's why that one gets the most credit. But yes, your internet service provider can block you from any content it doesn't want you to have. And the idea that net neutrality, there's never been a need for it. It was actually blocking by Comcast that led to the initial legal dispute over net neutrality back in 2008 and 2009.
Can you talk a little bit about the arguments under the Trump administration and a then Republican-led FCC to get rid of net neutrality?
Well, what the agency did under the Trump administration is they moved regulation out of Title II and back to Title I. And what that means is that what what the conservatives would call a light touch regulatory approach, there were some provisions that ISPs had to comply with. There was a transparency requirement. There was some disclosure requirements on when and how they would throttle content. But what's really different about what the PI-led FCC did during the Trump administration is that the agency actually argued against a rule that was being upheld in court, and that would be the Title II rule that was passed under the Obama administration in 2015.
We are talking about net neutrality. Christopher Terry is with us from the University of Minnesota. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this debate for years, over a decade, actually? You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. Christopher, as I understand it, part of the core argument here is, you know, what is broadband? Is it an information service? Is it a telecommunication service? Is it a utility? Can you talk about some of these fundamental conceptual debates over how and if we regulate these?
Sure. Under Title II, which is what the FCC is trying to move back to with this latest action, broadband is treated as a common carrier. Common carrier, most easily understood by your audience, is probably the old school traditional on-the-wall phone line, where your internet service provider can make money by delivering content to and from you as the consumer, but really can't discriminate against the content that moves through that system. They can't make any decisions about what that content is, assuming that content is legal. Under Title I, which is the information service approach, the FCC more or less stays out of that equation. And what happens there is that the providers have more control over their own networks. And that gives them the ability to make decisions to block, throttle, or prioritize content.
If I'm an internet consumer with a service provider that does do this stuff, slows down this content over there that they're not making money on, speeds up this content that they do make money on, am I going to feel the difference? Am I going to notice it?
Very much so. In fact, about halfway through this process, after the second court case, which was Verizon's challenge to the FCC's second set of net neutrality rules, there was a short period of time after that decision where streaming services, like especially, but also including Netflix, were being throttled by providers. And it was noticeable at the time. If your content is being throttled, you will notice it very quickly.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Menominee. Chris, hi.
Hi. I was wondering what the guests thoughts were on revisiting Section 230 of the Federal Communications Act in relation to liable by internet service providers about putting forth information that's potentially knowingly false, harmful, or dangerous, and what his thoughts are on. I am in favor of revisiting this issue. I think we've moved quickly, and it's time to revisit it.
Chris, thanks for the call. Christopher, as I understand it, Section 230 is a big internet law issue. Is it tangential to this net neutrality, or is there a stronger connection than I think?
Well, lots of people are trying to draw a connection between those two things, but they're not closely related. Section 230 is an element of the Telecommunications Act that protects platforms, by that I mean websites, for content that's posted by third parties. So in the caller's hypothetical, an internet service provider that is posting its own content that is defamatory and he said libel, but in defamatory terms, the internet service provider doesn't have any protection for that. What it does have protection is if you or the caller post something on Facebook, Twitter, I'm sorry, X, or what have you, that is defamatory. So if I defame you in some way, Rob, I commit libel against you online, the platform where I post that is not liable for the content that I post. And that's an entirely separate legal issue. I'd be happy to come on a different day to discuss in detail if you'd like.
Chris, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Christopher, this net neutrality issue doesn't inherently seem like something that should be a Republican, Democratic debate. And yet, we have these party line votes of Democratic and Republican appointees moving it one way or and then the other. Why has this become a partisan issue at the FCC and beyond?
Well, I don't really understand that, because the entire debate started during the Bush administration, when Michael Powell, who is now actually arguing against net neutrality rules in his position with the NCTA, but he was the one who advocated for the first set of net neutrality rules, which were called the Four Principles. And it's really very much become sort of a partisan issue, but I don't understand why. It's really a consumer protection issue at its core.
We're talking University of Minnesota media ethics and law professor Christopher Terry about net neutrality rules, what's happened since they were repealed at the federal level, what could change if they're brought back. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the net neutrality back and forth over the last bunch of years? What do you think? How do you feel about your internet service provider now? Do you have accessible high-speed internet where you are in the first place? Join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Christopher Terry, Associate Professor of Media Ethics and Law at the University of Minnesota. We're talking to him about the internet regulations known as net neutrality. They were repealed at the federal level during the Trump administration. Now the FCC under President Biden is working to bring those regulations back. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about this idea of net neutrality? What questions do you have for our expert? Do you feel like you see that sometimes where something is faster online? Certain services say other things are slower than you might expect. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Christopher, I want to add another element in here, and we heard this from the FCC commissioner earlier. The idea that, in effect, for a lot of people, the market is not an answer to this problem. They may not, if they feel like their services are being throttled, they can't just move to another business. They might only have one or maybe two options.
Yes, that's a significant part of what Commissioner Rosenworcel is trying to put forward. I think one thing that never gets mentioned when it comes to net neutrality is that part of what goes on is we make a Title II reference as simple as net neutrality. What the FCC is trying to do this time is actually resolve some unresolved broadband regulatory issues, including the competition issue. There is not very much competition in places in the United States. In fact, in most places, you don't have two high-speed providers as options. You might have a high-speed and a close to high-speed. But in many places, there's only one, and in still a significant part of the United States, there's none. And that issue is tied back to the debate over net neutrality. When the FCC lost the ability to enforce net neutrality in the Comcast decision in 2010, it undermined the FCC's authority to implement the National Broadband Plan.
Did the Obama-era regulations on net neutrality fix or change that after that court ruling?
Well, for the short period of time they were in place,
right,
it did give the FCC some authority to move forward. But part of the issue that we see right now is the Biden administration has allocated quite a bit of money to resolve broadband gaps, and the FCC even has to wrestle with people that it's trying to give money to implement broadband, because it doesn't have all of the necessary authority that it wants or probably could use under Title I, which is part of what the FCC is trying to do with the move back to Title II.
The FCC provisionally approved this 3-2 vote we mentioned earlier. These kind of federal regulations, they are not a one-step process. What would happen from now on to bring net neutrality back into place at the federal level?
Well, they haven't provisionally approved it. They approved the decision to decide whether or not they're actually going to do it.
Gotcha.
They are currently taking comments. The comment period extends into December. I don't know exactly what will happen if the government shuts down. But in early December, the FCC will take a first round of comments out of a docket, examine what those decisions, what those comments say. It may modify the rule at that point, and at some point, 60 to 90 days after that, it will propose a new rule, a new version of what it proposed a couple weeks ago. There'll be another round of comments, and then 60 to 90 days after that, we might see the final rule, which would then take another 60 to 90 days to implement.
The comment process itself has been controversial in the past. Under the Trump administration, FCC commissioners pointed toward a lot of comments against net neutrality. It emerged later that a lot of those weren't actual human people making those comments. Can you take us back to what we found out then?
Sure. Initially, with the Title II order in 2015, the FCC took in about 3.5 million comments, public comments. A lot of those were just sort of emails or whatever. A lot of it was driven by John Oliver's segment on net neutrality. When the FCC went to repeal the Title II order under the Trump administration, there was some astroturfing of comments. In fact, someone used my name and address to file a comment against net neutrality, as did for Mickey Mouse and all sorts of other types of people. There's some assessments that that commenting scheme generated as many as 16 million comments, about two-thirds of which are just fake.
Talking to Christopher Terry, Associate Professor of Media Ethics and Law at the University of Minnesota, talking about the years-long back and forth in net neutrality when it comes to broadband internet, the FCC moving to bring it back, early stages there. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Is there still action going on at the state level, Christopher? Are you seeing more states moving to join California and others with their own net neutrality rules?
There were several states that were looking at it, but I think they're kind of playing the wait and see game now, because the federal regulation, if it does go back on the books and survives the judicial review, would preempt the state law, including California's, ironically.
Now, here, of course, we're talking about the United States. What are we seeing the rest of the world do when it comes to issues of net neutrality?
Well, it depends on where you're talking about. European regulators are arguing over it. In the UK, they're having a significant debate over whether or not net neutrality should apply. Some countries, it's just sort of built into how their internet system works because they don't have quite as commercial of media system as we do here in the U.S.
Let's bring on another caller at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, I was wondering how this future net neutrality law would affect me. For example, is I recently purchased the Hulu, Disney, ESPN bundle, but my carrier, Charter, won't let me get the ESPN unless I buy the upgrade TV app to play ESPN. But it's all, I'm paying for ones and zeros. What's the difference between the ones and zeros of Disney or Hulu and the ones and zeros of ESPN? I don't get why they're allowed to charge me extra for ones, other different ones and zeros.
Mike, thanks for the call. Christopher, does this tap into the net neutrality argument?
Yes, but also involves the a la carte cable argument. The short answer for the caller is that if there are provisions on the books that says your internet service provider cannot dictate any terms on which your content moves back and forth to you, as it could not under common carrier, it would not be able to charge you the extra part for that.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mike. Now, Christopher, when net neutrality came into place, I think there were dire predictions that it would hurt the market, hurt the companies that provide internet services, ultimately hurt our services in the long run. When net neutrality was repealed, at least at the federal level, as you mentioned, it's still in place at the state level, arguments that this would be a disaster for the internet. I mean, are both sides over-exaggerating the impacts of going back and forth on this?
Yes, very much so. The chief argument for Title II that I think, and I'm a strong supporter of net neutrality in sort of in concept, is that it assesses one set of regulations that everyone in the telecommunications world clearly understands. It's a federal system. It's been around since the 1930s. Everybody understands what the rules are. There are some concerns about the rate regulations and stuff, and the FCC has provided some forbearance in this proposed set of rules for that. But this is an issue that I mean, I think I said the day that the announcement was made, it was like a classic hit station of all the same old rhetoric has been put back out, because it very much has. And it's a very heated issue over a very nerdy regulatory position.
Now we see changes under a Democratic president, reversed under a Republican, now maybe going back the other way. Is this a case where Congress ultimately could step in and say, okay, we're going to clarify what we want on this part of telecommunications regulation and put an end to the debate for a while?
Absolutely. And in fact, I think for all the finger pointing we have back and forth at the FCC, fingers should be pointed at Congress. The issue wasn't really well understood at the beginning of this debate, but after the Verizon decision, when the national broadband plan was basically derailed 21 days after it was launched, Congress should have gotten involved one way or the other and just provided clarity. Until Congress tells the FCC what to do, the FCC is, whether you agree with Title I or Title II, it is trying to apply old regulation to a system that it doesn't have a lot of guidance on what Congress wants it to do. As an administrative agency, the FCC can only really do what it's told, and it's trying to do that right now.
In our last few moments, Christopher, if people feel strongly about this, how do they get in touch with the FCC during this comment period?
The FCC's website has the electronic comment filing system. Do a search for the net neutrality docket, and you can easily file a comment there right online. It's a very simple form.
Christopher, thanks again for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
That's Christopher Terry, Associate Professor of Media Ethics and Law at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. He's with us today for a look at why the FCC is looking to bring back net neutrality rules at the federal level, what it could mean for the way we use the internet.